Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's 2 weeks to go till U.S. Election Day. Third quarter earnings season is in full swing. The data on the U.S. economy continues to show good strength, and the S&P 500 ended last week at an all-time high. So there is a lot out there for investors to consider at the moment. Joining us to begin another trading week and to weigh in on all of these considerations, joining us for the CIO Strategy Snapshot, glad to once again welcome back Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. With that, Jason, thank you for dropping by. Looking forward to our conversation. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. It's great to be here another week where it's going to be apparently 82 degrees here in New York City today. So it's not fall, despite what it's supposed to be in the calendar.
Yeah, definitely unseasonable for this time of year. So, Jason, as mentioned, a lot of considerations for investors at the moment. Maybe let's begin with the U.S. economy. I do recall after the September retail sales data was released, there was some talk about the economy reaccelerating. So I'm curious to hear, Jason, your assessment of that possibility.
Well, the warm weather here may be a metaphor for the kind of hot aspect of the economy, given some of the data. So as you mentioned, like the retail sales data we got for September came in strong. The core retail sales, it kind of strips out sort of more volatile things like, you know, energy and gas consumption. They rose 0.7% month over month. The headline rose 0.4% month over month. These are elevated levels on a monthly basis. If we look at the third quarter overall, if you factor in inflation, core retail sales rose at about 5% at an annualized rate. That's a very strong level. I mean, if we get a 2% sort of real spending growth, that's a good number. So 5% indicates, certainly the consumer's is spending and is not holding back at all. Now, by exceeding these expectations going in, retail sales were just the latest data point that contributed to sort of the economic surprise indices, moving higher, meaning the data is kind of beating what the expectations were. What we had in the spring into the summer was data kind of routinely was disappointing. And by mid-July, by quite a bit on a consistent basis. Since that time, and particularly since kind of mid-August, the data has now been kind of surprising to the upside. We saw that with retail sales last week. We saw that with the September payrolls report. It clearly beat on the upside. And while there wasn't a lot of focus on the expectations for GDP revisions, those are clearly much stronger than what investors were expecting in that data we got a few weeks ago. And that goes back for a few years. So all that paints a picture of a U.S. economy that is holding up very, very well is why the kind of consensus forecast among economists that have been trending higher for the past couple of months. For the third quarter, it went from roughly 1.5% in mid-August down to 2.1%, and that probably doesn't really include the latest retail sales data because unless the forecasts were revised that quickly in light of the data coming out last Thursday. If you look at the GDP nowcast tracking estimate for Q3 from the Atlanta Fed, that is up to 3.4%, and that has been kind of rising steadily. So in terms of the question then, is this economy sort of reaccelerating? If you look at sort of GDP number on a quarterly basis, it looks that way because it's 1.6% in Q1, 3% Q2, and maybe even over 3% in Q3. My own personal view though is this is more about, a reflecting sort of normal fluctuations around sort of a trend level of growth rather than sort of, reacceleration. Because if we look at the second half of last year, the economy grew, comfortably over 3% in the second half of last year. So really what we have is Q1 looks a little bit anomalous just on the headline GDP numbers. And some of this all may be due to the challenges of estimating, GDP numbers due to kind of seasonal adjustment factors that have been perhaps distorted by in this post-pandemic world. Things like kind of trades, net exports, inventories also kind of distorting the numbers. So yes, it looks like the economy is accelerating. I would say it's just performing and has performed for over a year now at a really elevated level. And that's the real story more so than whether it's reaccelerating.
Okay, now related to the reacceleration possibility is the idea of a no landing outcome for the U.S. economy. Now, Jason, in your latest blog, which is titled The 5% Landing, you do suggest that the economy has landed, but at an elevated level. So what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, the conjecture or asking whether the economy has reaccelerated, we can at least kind of quantify that by looking at the data and it's getting better or worse. These kind of soft landing or no landing kind of debate, it's a little bit muddled by the fact that, there's not clear kind of definitions or, you know what these actually entail. So what I try to do is just sort of say, well, what does actually this mean? Like, what does a landing look like? What would a no landing be? And maybe, you know, what I would sort of say was like, well, perhaps we've landed, but we've landed at something that I call like the 5% economy. Now, a soft landing, the way I've kind of inferred it is, at least how investors tend to think of it, is that you're going ultimately going to be avoiding a recession and returning back toward this sort of a presumed trend level growth of around 2%, maybe a little bit less, and inflation back to 2%. And therefore, a no landing means the economy has to be above those levels, but perhaps only indefinitely, eventually you're going to return to, you know, to those levels. Now, given that the economy has really been growing about by 3% real GDP over the past year, you know, you could say, well, a no landing would mean that, you know, we would continue that level. But I think a better way to think about this landing situation is more in terms of nominal GDP growth. And that's where the 5% comes in. And I'm talking about sort of the 5% nominal GDP growth. That's sort of the plateau that the economy's landed to. Whereas before, there might have been assumptions that it was like around a 4% landing. 5% nominal GDP growth is how fast the economy actually grew in the first half of this year. Last year was over 6%, and the prior 2 years was over 9 and 10%, respectively. Based on the inflation data we have for Q3 and the tracking estimates for GDP, it's likely to be around, again, 5% in Q3. And given the strong momentum the economy has coming into the fourth quarter, it could certainly be in that level again. So we could have a year where nominal GDP growth is around 5%. Now, characterizing this, you know, as say a no landing outcome, I think that to some extent that can maybe reflect a recency bias amongst investors, when in fact, this is more of the long-term historical norm for how fast the economy is growing. You know, for perspective, nominal GDP grew 5.8% from 1992 to 2000. Is about 5.4% from 2002 to 2007. So I'm abstracting from some of the recession period, that kind of an expansion, like what is it growing at? It's 5.5% to 6% in those two decades, but it's only 4% in the 2010s. Now, as we get further past the 2010s, it is increasingly looking like that post global financial crisis decade was or is the anomaly. It was weighed down by a prolonged recovery from the financial crisis that weighed on growth, also weighed on inflation. So for those investors who are kind of anchoring on that decade to figure out, well, how fast should the economy grow, that's actually the wrong sort of metric. And in fact, the 20 years prior, it was over 5%. Now, I'm not even suggesting we'll grow that fast, but something more along the lines of what we've been doing the past couple of years, the past year, and where it looks like we're going to be for at least the next couple of quarters is sort of a more realistic assumption, like of around 5%. So to me, like, this is the case. This is perhaps where we've landed. And given that you're going to have sort of fluctuations around sort of that level of, say, 5%, what looks like acceleration in the past, you know, few months, past couple of quarters, perhaps again, is just fluctuations around that sort of 5% level. So that's what I mean by kind of a 5% landing. Like, this is sort of what the economy is going to do. And when you think about it that perspective, when you kind of zoom out, we're not really kind of re-accelerating. We're just kind of fluctuating around that long-term trend.
Okay. Now, outside of economic considerations, within the latest UBS House View update, the chief investment office did move equities to attractive. So what was the rationale for this change, Jason?
Well, we did upgrade equities to attractive, and this is the broad asset class equities kind of globally, but primarily it's driven by an upgrade of U.S. equities to attractive on kind of large cap equities within it. So I've already alluded to or mentioned the details of the growth outlook, how growth is strong, and it might be sort of at a sustainable higher kind of trend level of nominal GDP growth around 5%, which matters for financial markets and it matters for equities because, you know, revenue growth will kind of move in line with nominal GDP growth, and that will mean also perhaps higher, you know, earnings all else equal. So that's kind of good for the fundamental story for equities. That's even better than we sort of expected a month ago, given its upward revisions to some of the economic data. We also still expect, though, the Fed to keep cutting rates, and we're still calling for 225 basis point cuts this year and 100 next year. There is certainly a risk that the Fed doesn't quite do as much if the economy continues, you know, to hold up. But directionally, the Fed is biased towards cutting, which, again, is favorable. So those fundamental factors are why we upgraded equities, you know, to attractive. In doing so, we also looked at our price targets for the S&P 500. Now it is 6,300 in June of next year from 6,200. And we introduced a December of 2025 target, so roughly a little over 12 months away, at 6,600. So we're looking at 11, 12% kind of premium price return, you know, from by the end of next year from the current levels. You know, another factor, in addition to the fundamentals being sort of, you know, definitely supportive, is, you know, overall investor positioning. It doesn't look particularly extreme in terms of how much investors have on regarding equity risk overall, how much kind of cash they have, how much they could kind of deploy. Whether we look at sort of more, you know, fast money, hedge funds, systematic strategies, a lot of their indicators of their overall positioning suggest it's kind of around long-term average levels. So there's certainly scope for them to, you know, add risk over time. And likewise, I think for retail investors and sort of more asset-allocated types, I think they still have certainly the ability to kind of shift out of your cash fixed income into equities. They're not necessarily at elevated levels. What it means is that there's kind of scope for investors to kind of re-risk their portfolios or take up risk, especially into kind of year end. If the markets continue to move higher, they may change performance. And after we get through, you know, the election on November 5th, the following day is the next FOMC meeting. Right before that, we get some more jobs data. That as you kind of get through some of these risk events, a little more clarity, at least on the potential path going forward, there's a decent chance that investors will then choose that as an opportunity to kind of add more exposure. And that could sort of fuel kind of a rally into year end, especially because historically November, December are good time periods. I think investors would be reluctant or concerned about sort of, you know, missing out, and like the fear of missing out could sort of drive them more on a short-term basis, aided by the good fundamental story that I think is the key driver for overall view.
Okay, so Jason, appreciate the clarity there on equities. Now, given your outlook and a positive outlook at that, what are the risks here that investors should be mindful of?
Well, the macro still, you know, looks definitely favorable, but I wouldn't say this is a kind of, you know, the skies are clear and smooth sailing from here for the markets just to keep kind of going higher. From a macro perspective, this composition of the 5% nominal growth that I'm kind of talking about, I think it matters a lot. You know, and in simple terms, the larger the percentage of that 5% that you can attribute to real growth, you know, the better the economic outlook. So to give you some examples, a 3% real growth rate and 2% inflation, that's kind of Goldilocks. That means growth is holding steady and inflation keeps coming down. The Fed has ample room to cut rates, you know, in that scenario. That's kind of the ideal conditions. A second scenario is that growth and inflation are both around 2.5%. That's kind of, you know, where we've been, or sort of, you know, kind of closer to that than perhaps Goldilocks. That's a good economy. The Fed can keep, you know, cutting rates, it has scope to cut them, but maybe not quite like the Goldilocks if inflation is still, you know, kind of at, you know, at above 2% and its trend is kind of getting a little bit sort of stuck to kind of go much lower. Then sort of there's another scenario where growth is actually kind of moderates. We're back at 2%, yet inflation, you know, kind of stays stuck around, you know, closer to 3%. I would classify that as sort of undesirable, you know, overheating, and that the economy is kind of running hot with inflation high, but it's not because demand or growth is strong, it's because maybe other factors are just pushing inflation higher. In that scenario, the Fed really doesn't have any scope to cut rates, and in fact, they may have to keep policy very restrictive, you know, for a while in order to bring inflation down, and actually would probably want to see growth below 2% to ensure that inflation is lower. And if that's the situation, well, that's not an outcome that investors want to see if the Fed is essentially trying to tighten financial conditions to slow the economy. That goes back to something kind of comparable to 2022. You know, right now, I'd say the economy is currently straddling the line between kind of the good and Goldilocks kind of macro kind of scenarios that I just outlined. And it's likely to stay that way into next year with, you know, some of the fears of, you know, overheating, you know, not that far away. So as long as it's between good and Goldilocks, that's again a favorable environment for risk assets and for equities. And so the direction of travel should be higher for equities, for other risk assets. But we're going to get periods of market volatility whenever there are any incoming data causes investors to kind of shift their probabilities amongst these different kind of growth inflation combinations. The more it goes to Goldilocks, the better, but the more it kind of leads to good outcomes or potentially kind of raising the risk of it's overheating, the more you're going to get the markets kind of, you know, be concerned about what the Fed can do, how much they can cut, and you get kind of pullbacks. You know, whether those shifts in probabilities are sort of warranted, that's, you know, kind of oftentimes debatable because the market can't overreact to one or two data points without sort of seeing the big picture of where the trend is going. So I think that's, you know, kind of continue sort of choppiness and almost in some sense climbing the wall of fear going higher because of those probabilities shifting around. And it's not just the economic data that can do this. The election implications are such that, say, if we get a red sweep where Republicans get the presidency with if Trump wins and they get both the House and Senate, I think at least initially the market will kind of react by shifting more probabilities towards sort of, I would call it inflationary growth. So, you know, growth is elevated, but maybe this is good data where inflation stays, you know, also high. That could lift long-end treasury yields. It could lift the kind of the US dollar even if it looks kind of U.S. equities in the short term on a better growth outlook. So there's, you know, there are different implications of how the market kind of shifts among these probabilities. And it's not just, you know, all kind of, you know, all clear just because growth looks good in and of itself. The type of growth, the type of inflation environment also matters a great deal.
So, Jason, outside of equities, looking across the allocation table, what else is CIO recommending at this time?
Well, within fixed income, you know, we still like, you know, quality fixed income. Given where spreads are quite tight, we don't think it's necessary to take or not advised to take a lot of kind of credit risk at this point in time, especially in corporate credit. Given the macro environment, equities can benefit from the upside, but high yield spreads that are already, you know, below 300, there's not a lot of sort of upside to them kind of compressing yet. If we're wrong on the growth and we're wrong on inflation, rates go higher, then certainly high yields could be impacted. On contrast, something like investment grade corporate bonds, their spreads are also, you know, quite tight, you know, but the longer duration, they're going to be less economic sensitive. And if there is a bit of a slowdown where the Fed has to cut rates, then they would certainly benefit from the long duration. So we think that that's a, we also see a kind of pick up an additional income relative to the treasury bonds. Now, we also wouldn't recommend getting too far out in sort of duration at this point in time, given the risk that, you know, it's more of, you know, overheating concerns and sort of rapid cooling concerns. There is a chance that longer in yields, like the 10-year or the 30-year, go higher. So from that perspective, you could be impacted negatively on duration. So it's more of the 5 to 7 year, you know, kind of, you know, target, you know, range of, you know, of duration that we're looking at, you know, to for trending within quality fixed income. Other asset classes that we like are gold and oil within commodities. Gold continues to kind of grind higher, and it's in an environment where it's Goldilocks, gold may not do well, but in sort of this good environment or in a kind of an inflationary environment, gold could do well. So we think it is also a bit of a portfolio hedge and diversification relative to the overall kind of macro environment. Oil stands to benefit again more as a bit of a hedge against geopolitical tensions, you know, more so than kind of, you know, the fundamentals are certainly, you know, fine, but I think it's also kind of a bit of a hedge in terms of, you know, the overall macro outlook. So the bottom line is good macroeconomic data, good macro conditions are favorable for risk assets. Equities and kind of U.S. large cap equities, we feel like offer the kind of the best risk reward trade-off to increase allocations within fixed income, staying kind of high quality, don't necessarily, you know, reach for yield, you know, or duration at this point in time, and look for some parts of the commodity, you know, complex, gold in particular, as a way to kind of hedge, you know, some of the risks that are out there from a macro perspective.
Well, Jason, thank you for dropping by again on this Monday morning to take an inventory of the considerations on the minds of investors at the moment and for keeping our listeners up to speed on the current allocation recommendations from the UBS Chief Investment Office. A nice speaking with you as always, Jason. Wish you a nice week ahead and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next week.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been joined by Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I will point our listeners and our clients to ubs.com/CIO. There, our listeners can locate Jason's latest blog, The 5% Landing, along with the November UBS House View publication suite. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.